Pandora, Africa, Asia, and Dino Land, which surround the island. As you look around Discovery Island, colors and cultures abound. The love of animals is clear throughout, with folk art and colorful architecture from the Caribbean, the South Pacific, and coastal Africa. Much like Main Street, Discovery Island is rife with shops and restaurants. Rather than conveying the feel of any town USA, here the setting is a village, and many of the items you see throughout this area actually came from villages. 1,500 2 to 3 foot long hand-painted wooden folk art animal carvings were crafted on the island of Bali by native craftsmen. Imagineers brought these items back from their research trips so they could adorn Discovery Island. Another great example of authenticity in artifacts can be found at two of the restaurants on the island, Pizzafari and Flame Tree Barbecue. Page 96 of the book, The Making of Disney's Animal Kingdom Park, recounts an interesting story for Pizzafari. 4 hours up a dirt and boulder mountain road in Oaxaca, Mexico, Imagineering's interiors team found Rogelio Blas and his family. Rogelio carves fantastically shaped animals. Then his wife and kids paint them in bright colors and whimsical patterns. The Imagineers ordered 300 bats, 120 bugs, and 150 butterflies to hang in Pizzafari. The creativity and details that complement the storyline are also seen within Pizzafari's murals and mosaics throughout the 5 themed rooms. Quoting from the same book, page 97, for Pizzafari's 5 dining rooms, 34 stunning murals were painted by Imagineering veteran Frank Armitage and his artist daughter, Nicole. Oversized animals rendered in bright colors look down from the walls of one room, while animals that hide in their environments peek out in another. Creatures that carry their houses on their backs, turtles and snails and hermit crabs, creep along in a third room. Another theme is animals that come out at night. There is even a whole room based on animals that hang upside down. Within all the detailed and elaborate themes, there's still a hidden Mickey or two within the murals on the walls. In the room with the various forms of sea life on the walls, spot the turtle and see if you can find the hidden Mickey on the lower left portion of the shell. A similar hidden Mickey is depicted in the spots of a leopard in another mural. As you leave Pizzafari, keep an eye out for the animal-shaped benches around Discovery Island, made entirely of recycled materials. On the other end of the culinary spectrum and the island is Flame Tree Barbecue. It's not hard to figure out what's on the menu here. What may be a little more intriguing is the often overlooked theme of the restaurant, the dynamic between predator and prey. Look for a few examples, such as snakes and mice, or ants and anteaters. The prey are painted on the tables, and the predators are depicted in the chairs. Have a seat and become part of the food chain. The atmosphere and architecture of the building are primarily that of a traditional Balinese water garden, but there are also influences from the American Southwest, Spain, Iran, and the Philippines. Just across the way from the Flame Tree Barbecue is the entrance to the show It's Tough to Be a Bug, which is housed inside the iconic symbol of the park, the Tree of Life. The original concept for this location was for it to be home to a restaurant, tentatively called The Roots, but as it turned out, a 3D show featuring the stars of A Bug's Life was a better fit. Another early concept for the Tree of Life was for folks to get a bird's eye view of the park by taking a trip to the top of the tree and enjoying a bit of a scenic overlook. Those plans, too, were eventually scrapped. While those two plans didn't come to fruition, what did make it off the drawing board is still very remarkable, especially when you know that what you're actually looking at is a repurposed offshore oil drilling platform. During the initial planning phase of the tree, Disney was going to borrow a page from the Epcot playbook and build a geodesic dome. The branches and leaves would be attached to its surface to form the tree. However, one day, inspiration that brought about a design change struck at an odd time. A member of the design team was watching a television program that talked about offshore drilling platforms. Eureka! It just so happens the shape, strength, and ability to withstand nature's elements would be a perfect fit for the park's iconic symbol. With the details and design concept complete, Disney went to work, creating the 145-foot tall tree, spanning 50 feet at its base. According to the Imagineer's mythology, the tree is supposed to have been the first thing here. The village came here to the tree. It is the source of life and water for the village and Discovery Island, and presumably for the rest of the animal kingdom as well. 10 artists and 3 Imagineers worked full-time for more than 18 months to create more than 300 animal carvings, in no particular order, size, and scale. From a seahorse to an elephant, the full spectrum of animals is well represented. Sculptors had between 6 and 10 hours to create each masterpiece before the plaster hardened and their work was immortalized. While the exterior of the Tree of Life was coming to life, world-renowned primatologist, feel free to address her as Dame or Doctor, as she's the owner of both of these titles, Jane Goodall, who works closely with Disney, visited the park while it was under construction. She inquired as to whether there was a chimp on the tree. Within a few weeks, Goodall's most famous subject, David Greybeard, was sculpted into the tree. As you enter It's Tough to Be a Bug, feel free to give your regards to David, as he's featured prominently near the entrance. The Tree of Life features 45 secondary branches that lead to 756 tertiary branches that taper to 7,891 end branches, which feature roughly 103,000 foot-long leaves in 5 different shades of green that actually blow in the wind. And to think, the final look of this massive tree was actually based on a bonsai tree the design team saw at Epcot's International Flower and Garden Festival, which they visited during the design and concept phase for the iconic structure. If you want a closer, more detailed look at the carvings on the tree, wander around the Discovery Island trails that meander around the tree and offer a peaceful, self-guided view of different angles of the tree. They also offer opportunities to spot any of the following animals along the way: white stork, Asian small-clawed otter, red kangaroo, West African crowned crane, African crested porcupine, Galapagos tortoise, lesser flamingo, macaw, ring-tailed lemur, saddleback stork, and who would want to miss the lappet-faced vultures? By its very definition, Discovery Island is obviously surrounded by water, the Discovery River, to be exact. The river is composed of 27 million gallons of water, which could fill about 1,800 average-size backyard swimming pools. And while the river looks great for the aesthetics of the park, starting in early 2017, it became an integral part of the evening entertainment scene. For much of its existence, the Animal Kingdom was primarily a day park, with very little in the way of evening offerings. All of that changed in 2017, when Discovery Island became the center of evening entertainment. As day turns to night, the Discovery Island Carnival ushers in an evening cavalcade of dancers, stilt walkers, and musicians for a nighttime dance party along the streets. As the carnival sets the mood for the evening, the majestic Tree of Life awakens from its daytime existence and comes alive with color and light every 10 minutes. Watch as flickering fireflies magically appear and stir to life the wondrous animal spirits carved into the tree's towering trunk. Gaze upon a young doe embarking upon a thrilling journey. Behold love blossoming between a pair of hummingbirds. See a fox spreading gifts of love among the denizens of a wintry forest. These 2 evening experiences take place somewhat informally, as background experiences when you stroll the area. But the evening show, Rivers of Light, celebrates the beauty of all living things. It premiered along the Discovery River in February 2017. Here's a bit more about the 15-minute outdoor show. Eastern festival traditions merge with innovative technology to make Rivers of Light come alive. Featuring evocative, never-before-seen footage from Disney nature, live performances, and floating set pieces set to a soaring original musical score, this nighttime show employs a host of magical devices to create an immersive experience that's unique to anything else on the planet. The flickering ornamentation of fireflies illustrates the migration of light, a central motif of the production. As the story unfolds, original video projections and choreographed laser animation combine to create the appearance of glowing fireflies, illuminating moments of the celebration like living pixie dust. Mysteriously, the show's storytellers never utter a word. Instead, they communicate volumes through fascinating forms of authentic Asian dance, music, song, and shadow puppetry. The lush lagoon setting is a central character itself, an ever-changing canvas for the unveiling of an unforgettable tale. Discovery Island features some great evening entertainment, but for the real showstopper, walk across the Discovery Island Bridge that leads into Pandora and check out all the world of Avatar has to offer. As mentioned earlier in the chapter, the Beastly Kingdom didn't make it off the drawing board and into the park. But that's okay, because in 2017, another mystical place, Pandora, the world of Avatar, took a leap from the big screen and landed at Walt Disney World. The largest addition to Disney's Animal Kingdom is based upon the 2009 record-breaking blockbuster movie Avatar. The addition of this land to the park stays consistent with Disney's theme for the Animal Kingdom. Sure, there's fun, adventure, and heaps of Disney magic, but the appreciation of nature and conservation is still at the forefront of both the movie and its theme park representation. In May 2017, to celebrate the grand opening of Pandora, the world of Avatar, at Disney's Animal Kingdom, Walt Disney Parks and Resorts and the Disney Conservation Fund announced Connect to Protect, a commitment of up to $1 million to help protect and restore habitats critical to 10 at-risk animals. The contribution will be unlocked by guests who participate in conservation missions while exploring the immersive land of Pandora. For the first time ever, guests will get to choose which animal that donation will support. If $1 million to help endangered animals sounds great, how does $65 million sound? This is the amount Disney has donated since they launched their conservation efforts to reverse the decline of at-risk wildlife and increase the time kids spend in nature. Disney's Conservation Fund has helped to protect more than 400 species, including elephants, butterflies, and coral reefs, throughout more than 115 countries of the world. The fund was created during the conception of the Animal Kingdom Park. The members of Disney's Animal Kingdom Advisory Board implored the company to get involved with conservation efforts around the world, and this has been the backbone of the theme park ever since. Naturally, it's only fitting that Disney and James Cameron came together to showcase Pandora, the setting for a film with a strong environmental and conservation message. If you haven't had the opportunity to see the movie, don't worry. You'll still be able to appreciate this area of the park. As Joe Rohde explains, it is the planet Pandora where you can come, you can visit, and have your own unique adventure. Rather than reliving the adventures of characters from the film, you're going to come to the planet where those things happened, and have your own set of adventures you can own. We're taking our guests on a journey to this world in an experience that's as realistic and immersive as possible. In the movie, the world of Pandora is a setting for the action and characters whose story we follow. Here, guests are the primary characters immersed in an extremely vivid, authentic experience. As you walk over the Discovery River and enter Pandora, You're no longer a visitor to Walt Disney World, but an eco-tourist, now part of Alpha Centauri Expeditions, ACE, who has traveled to an exoplanet located in the Alpha Centauri star system, 4.4 light years from Earth. One light year is roughly 6 trillion miles. As you make your way into the Valley of Moara, this area is undergoing a rebirth long after the destructive mining operation known as the Resources Development Administration ceased operation and the human conflict with the Na'vi, the indigenous blue people who call Pandora home, has ended. As you walk through the valley, all of your senses should perk up, especially at night. The bioluminescence is remarkable, as out-of-this-world sights and sounds surround you. Na'vi drums, totems, and culture abound, along with some very bizarre animals and plants. One of the first things to experience is the Flasca reclinata, a very large plant on the right side of the walkway as you enter the land. There should be an ACE expert there to provide some information about the plant. Help the environment and touch the plant. See what happens when your touch helps to reseed the planet with the Flasca reclinata. As you continue your journey through Pandora, see if you can spot the Dapafit plant. It features a starburst bloom that resembles the live agave plant alongside it. Other unique Pandoran plants to look out for are the puffball tree, vein pod, scorpion thistle, and episoth. Each one of the Pandoran plants was hand-sculpted, and more than 250 varieties of earth trees are intermingled within the Pandoran flora. Disney planted more than 500 trees and 10,000 shrubs across the landscape in this area. Many of the plants throughout the land are interactive and feature a glowing bioluminescence at night. This is a great complement to the paths and walkways around the land that also glow at night. The walkways that glow are charged by the sunlight during the day, and Disney uses a black light, among some other tricks, to complete this vibrant experience. As you continue down the path and work your way deeper into Pandora, one of the first things your eyes are drawn to is the iconic floating mountains. There's a good chance you even noticed them when your vehicle pulled into the Animal Kingdom entrance. Well, now's your chance to get up close and personal with the 22 mountains that peak at about 130 feet above the valley floor. A team of more than 60 artisans from across the globe, United States, Japan, Ireland, Portugal, and Peru, came together to create the out-of-this-world artistic mountain landscape. If you look closely, you'll see a few Pandoran sting bats with their lethal tail spines in the mountains. You can get a better view of the mountains when you get in the queue for your chance to ride a beast on Flight of Passage. I'll let Disney's website take over with the backstory for the attraction. The journey begins in the queue as guests begin an uphill trek around a massive root structure, over a land bridge above waterfalls to an authentic totem garden. Meandering passageways lead to a cave-like structure where the great winged banshees, or ikran as the Na'vis call them, are celebrated in paintings and majestic totems. Next, guests enter an old, once-abandoned RDA facility with a laboratory partially restored. Here, there are scientific experiments in progress with references to habitat restoration, the ecosystem, water purification, and the connection of all living things. Next stop is the genetic matching room, where explorers are scanned and genetic material is sampled to connect them to personal avatars in preparation for a flight experience. Once matched, adventurers board link chairs, don flight visors, and prepare for the flight. Next stop, a mystical world like no other. Flying on the back of a banshee represents an important rite of passage for the Na'vi, and as visitors to the alien world, guests will have a chance to be tested and guided through the wondrous journey. After entering a state-of-the-art theater, each guest straddles a single-seat simulator, like a motorcycle, that delivers a realistic sensation of riding a living creature. Guests will experience the swift and graceful movements of flight and even feel the banshee breathing beneath them. The multi-sensory experience uses cutting-edge technology and intricate special effects like never before. This heart-pounding adventure transports explorers through the alien world of Pandora, offering lifelike encounters, splashing whale-like creatures, blowing wind, roaring banshees, and a threatening encounter with a flying predator. The exhilarating 4-minute flight through the sci-fi world of bioluminescence and floating mountains is orchestrated by a complex musical score recorded by the London Symphony Orchestra. If that description doesn't make you get in line for the ride, here's what Joe Rohde and then James Cameron had to say about it. In Flight of Passage, the sensation of flying is really visceral, really believable. Not only do you have the more obvious aspects of flying, the swooping and curving, but we've put in crosswind, air density, and banking. You know, riding the Ekron is a thrill. You're going to plunge. You're going to dive. You're going to swoop. It's like dreaming with your eyes open. So there you have it, a full-on multi-sensory experience. Not only will you feel like you're flying, but you'll feel the banshee beneath you breathe as you soar through the air. This is definitely a one-of-a-kind experience. Obviously, this is a must Fast Pass Plus attraction. And to be honest, if you have to wait in the long queue, it's worth it, as this experience is really unique and thrilling, and the queue is interesting in its own right. Obviously, both Joe Rohde and James Cameron have their creative fingerprints all over Pandora. On your way out of the attraction, look for Cameron's and Rohde's literal handprints on the wall. The technology used in Flight of Passage is really remarkable, but it isn't the only cutting-edge tech found in Pandora. Just across the way from the attraction is the Navi River Journey, a boat ride that culminates in an encounter with a lifelike 10-foot-tall Navi shaman. This 4-minute family-friendly expedition takes guests on a gentle river ride aboard an 8-person reed boat down a mysterious, sacred, bioluminescent rainforest. As you drift down the river, notice the animals and the Navi are moving in the same direction as you. Be sure to check out some of the plant leaves. You'll see a few critters scampering across. Toward the end of the attraction, you'll meet the Navi Shaman of Songs, who is in the midst of a musical ceremony. She is deeply connected with Pandora's life force and sends positivity into the forest through her music. The fluidity of her movement is extremely realistic and is Disney's most lifelike animatronic to date. Here's a quote about the shaman from Joe Rohde. "The shaman is even more extraordinary than we expected. Her facial expressions, little movements in the cheek, tiny movements in the eyelid, each one of these carries an emotion she's capable of conveying." If you look across Walt Disney World, you can actually follow the evolution of their signature audio animatronics. Think back to the Magic Kingdom and Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, featuring singing mechanical birds, which at the time seemed quite remarkable, but now, after seeing the shaman, seem crude and unsophisticated. Roger Broggy Jr., who helped pioneer the audio animatronic technology, told a story about an early version of an animatronic bird used in the 1964 movie Mary Poppins, which is similar to what went into the Enchanted Tiki Room. "We ran the wiring for the Mary Poppins robin through its feet. The first one we made wasn't quite insulated enough, and there was a slight electrical current running from it right through Julie Andrews' finger. She was astonished. I can see her trying like crazy to shake it off." Remember that quote after you experience the complexity and realism of the Shaman of Songs. The experience along the Navi River Journey illustrates that music is a central component of Navi culture and is featured prominently in the Valley of Moara. Throughout the day, at the Swotu Waya, meaning Sacred Place of Song, you can listen to the beats and rhythms of the Navi drum ceremony. There are even a few ways for visitors to join in and interact with instruments of the Navi. the collection of instruments in this area that anyone can play are connected to Pandora's root system. If you hit one of the drums, a response to your drumming can be heard overhead. Drum beats aren't the only sounds you can hear throughout Pandora. You will hear critters moving through the landscape as you walk about. Disney had to create the ambient background sounds for the land. Matt Beeler, a Disney show producer, comments on the Pandora soundtrack. For the land to feel like a real jungle from another planet, we don't have traditional background music in Pandora. We have a soundscape designed to make it feel as though it is an alien jungle. We hear vocalization patterns like mating calls and hunting moments, and this makes it feel real. When those moments happen, the lighting ties into that with waves of energy. It gives us a connectedness to nature. The sights and sounds of Pandora are an experience in and of themselves. But if you have an interest in enjoying either of the two attractions found here, you know what to do. Get yourself a FastPass Plus. To take your experience to the next level, visit at night as well, as the Pandoran experience is much more than the two rides. Before we leave Pandora and head over to Africa, a few words about the food. Just like over at Epcot's World Showcase, you can experience the foods of a foreign land, and the same goes for Pandora. Here's the backstory on the land's restaurant from a Disney press release. Satu Lee Canteen is the land's restaurant, with a design inspired by bases set up on Pandora by the Resources Development Administration, RDA, in the blockbuster Avatar film. Once the main mess hall of the RDA base in the Valley of Moara, the canteen is now owned and operated by the Alpha Centauri Expeditions, ACE, tour company, and has been redesigned into a beautiful, museum-like dining room open for lunch and dinner. The interior has been transformed with colorful Navi items filling the walls and hanging from the ceiling, hand-woven tapestries, natural Pandoran elements, and cooking tools decorate the interior. Satu Lee Canteen combines creativity and approachable flavors in a menu inspired by the healthful bounty on Pandora, with wholesome grains, fresh vegetables, and hearty proteins. An onstage grill is a prominent feature in the colorful dining room, bringing all five senses into play, said Ed Ronsky, director, culinary development for Walt Disney Parks and Resorts. Fast casual Satu Lee Canteen offers bowls that allow diners to customize their meal. Diners start with a base of quinoa and vegetable salad, red and sweet potato hash, mixed whole grain and rice or romaine and kale salad. Next is either wood-grilled chicken, slow-roasted beef, sustainable fish, or chili-spiced fried tofu. And the bowl is finished with charred onion chimichurri, black bean vinaigrette, or creamy herb dressing. This is one of our first fast-casual restaurants that gives guests the ability to customize their meal, said Ronsky. We played with the theme of Avatar and ended up with the bowl concept that is healthful, lighter, and with plant-based ingredients to tie back to the world of Avatar. The guiding principle, he said, was to balance creativity with dishes that are approachable. The menu also offers steamed pods, bao buns with either cheeseburger ingredients or vegetable curry, served with root vegetable chips and crunchy vegetable slaw. For little ones, there's an option of grilled chicken or beef, fish or tofu with greens or rice, a hot dog wrapped in Parker House dough, cheese quesadilla, or a steamed pod, cheeseburger bao bun. Dessert is blueberry cheesecake with passion fruit curd, or chocolate cake with a crunchy cookie layer, banana cream, and goji berries. That blueberry cheesecake dessert just mentioned was created by Walt Disney executive pastry chef Stefan Riemer, who in July 2017 was named a top 10 pastry chef in America by Dessert Professionals magazine. Riemer also created the pineapple cream cheese Pongu Lumpia, which is served at Pongu Pongu, also in Pandora. Jumbo, and welcome to Harambe, a little taste of Africa in Central Florida. Jambo means hello in Swahili, and Harambe translates into working together, also in Swahili. Harambe is a fictitious place in the sense that it allowed Disney to portray a village similar to many villages across Africa, one that wouldn't be tied to any political history of a region. As the Imagineering Field Guide to Disney's Animal Kingdom states, there's a very specific reason that the choice was made to portray this particular version of African life, storytelling. In order to achieve dramatic impact with the stories we wanted to create, we have to focus on one story at a time. Here, it is that of nature as a pristine thing, with animals that must be protected from poaching. Certainly, there are places in Nairobi or Lagos of Johannesburg in which one could mistake the setting for any large, modern city around the world. But to focus on that here would be to miss the point. This story is about animals, not humans. Here in Harambe, we're in a place very much like many places in Africa, where people really do live right on the edge of the wilderness, within close proximity of real wildlife. Another reason we created a fictitious place is that it allowed us to avoid becoming linked to the political history of any specific country. We use the design of Harambe to imply its history. Similarly, Swahili was chosen as the language of Harambe because it crosses geographic boundaries. It is important for this place to have a history, but equally important that it not get in the way of the animal story we're here to see and hear. Even though the narrative has been created, that doesn't mean the scenery and setting in Harambe lacks authenticity. The designs of the buildings, along with their construction materials, are authentic. Imagineers visited Lamu, an island off the coast of Kenya, and, inspired by the architecture, purchased pallets of bricks to send back to Florida. In Florida, the bricks were placed over steel frames and then coated in plaster, as is done in Lamu. A beautiful example of this brick and plaster work is seen at the tower built to the left of Tusker House Restaurant as you walk into Harambe from Discovery Island. This tower is a replica of an actual tower Imagineers fell in love with during one of their research trips to Africa. While you're at this location, roughly at the entrance to the village, you may notice a pattern of white bricks in the ground. These bricks portray what is left of the old city walls. As the story goes, Harambe was once walled off and had a brick perimeter, much like a fort. This is what's left of it. Continue your tour of the village and check out the thatched roofs. A crew of 13 craftsmen were brought in from Zululand, South Africa, to roof many of the buildings. The thatching was a family affair, as the berg grass used on the roofs was harvested by the workers' wives, sisters, and mothers back home. Once in Florida, the grass was tied in thick bundles with twine and hand-stitched utilizing tools called tulu, which are steel needles that are 18 inches long and half an inch thick. This is the traditional Zulu way. When in places roofing, the thatch weighs in at 70 pounds per square yard and is 4 to 6 inches thick. Obviously, it's all natural and biodegradable, but has an astonishing lifespan of 30 to 40 years. Since the design, building methods, and materials are authentic throughout Harambe, what's represented on the walls, interior, and exterior should be as well. Disney's prop buyers purchased many tin signs to display in the area. Certain pieces of ephemera they weren't able to purchase, they had to reproduce stateside. The making of Disney's Animal Kingdom shares some of the background on the process of how the names and verbiage seen around Harambe were created. On his many trips to Africa, Kevin Brown collected printed ephemera, stickers, signs, pamphlets, and newspapers for use by Imagineering graphic designers. His research in East Africa helped him cast his prose in Kenyan English with tweaked Third World Victorian phrasing, like, "Guests here will receive the highest facilitation." It was a little dangerous, confides Brown. The syntax can be intoxicating. With the help of a dictionary, Brown put any Swahili into roughly equivalent English, which then was vetted by a translator, Sarah Mirza, who teaches at a Los Angeles university. Brown mined the Nairobi Times obituaries for appropriate names. The Daily Nation-inspired business ads, like the East African Seed Company, always sound and reliable. If you have the time, really soak up Harambe. It's quite an interesting experience. There are lots of details to see beyond the authentic and witty signage. See if you can find a shout-out to a few Imagineers who worked on designing the Animal Kingdom. Joe Rohde, John Shields, and Ahmad Jafari. When you're done, it's time for the Kilimanjaro Safari. Lions, tigers, and bears, oh my! Actually, no tigers and bears, but definitely lions, and over 34 species of exotic African wildlife await you on your safari tour in the Harambe Wildlife Reserve. The Kilimanjaro Safari gives you an 18-minute, up-close and personal excursion in an open-air vehicle, fast pass either a day or night safari, allowing for great views of black and white rhinos, cheetahs, elephants, giraffes, and hippopotamuses, to name a few, all in a natural habitat setting as the animals roam free. Where did all these animals come from? When Disney decided to create the Animal Kingdom, they vowed to stand by two principles. First, the animals would come from captive-bred populations whenever possible, and they would attempt to work at all times within the zoo profession's species survival plans and taxon advisory groups. The making of Disney's Animal Kingdom elaborates on animal acquisition. No animal will be acquired if it is to the detriment of the wild population of the species. Perhaps the park will take animals out of the wild one day, but only if they are doomed in the wild, if their habitat has been destroyed, or if they would be shot. For instance, when parks and refuges in Africa run out of room and need to cull their animals. For instance, Imagineers originally planned to have giant otters at the park, but were told they would have to catch them in the wild. Instead, the park is now involved with giant otter conservation in the field. Ultimately, some of the creatures now residing at Disney's Animal Kingdom were purchased. Some were sent on loan. Some were donated. The amount of money that changed hands was minimal. The cost of transporting the animals to the park was more than the cost of the animals in almost every case. For animals on loan, the arrangement is often that Disney will donate half their offspring to the lending institution. In 1996, 2 years before the park opened, Disney acquired their first two animals for the safari, Miles and Zari, a pair of young giraffes. Since then, the animals under Disney's care have thrived. The number of species that have reproduced since the park debuted is upward of 150, with the first birth at the kingdom being a kudu, a large African antelope. 17 Micronesian kingfisher chicks were hatched there as well, raising the world population of these birds by 20%. The two black rhino calves born at the kingdom made them two of only approximately 200 worldwide. Impressively, Disney's Animal Kingdom is home to one of the largest groups of Nile and African elephants in North America. In late 2016, the Animal Kingdom welcomed a new female elephant calf, Stella. Her mom, Donna, has given birth to two other female calves, raising the number of elephants at the park to 10. With the stars of the safari show acquired, Disney had to get to work creating the perfect setting and environment. An environment that was not only safe for both inhabitants and visitors, but stimulating and entertaining for them as well. The research was conducted via many African safaris, where Imagineers were most interested in the setting and scene, such as the plants, rockwork. There's over 1 million square feet of rockwork in the Animal Kingdom, which is twice the volume of rockwork at Mount Rushmore. Dirt, pathways, and tire tracks, but not so much the wildlife. Disney did a great job capturing the essence of what they examined. Obviously, with all the wildlife to take in during your safari, it's probably not the most entertaining thing to do, and you're more likely to feel it as you drive along. If you happen to glance down at the roadway, you'll see it was constructed of a reinforced concrete pathway. It's 7.5 inches deep, thick enough to withstand the daily abuse of loaded safari vehicles. The ruts, potholes, hoof prints, and gravel were all placed deliberately. There are even strategically placed planters, so grass will grow between the wheel tracks of the safari vehicles. As mentioned in the beginning of the chapter, the land that is currently the animal kingdom was a cow pasture, as Joe Rohde explained to me. There was a large fireworks testing ground, approximately where the center line of the Northern Park runs. Most of the site was a cow pasture. There were a few groves of native oak trees, which we preserved and now sit at the beginning of the Kilimanjaro Safari Savannah and behind Expedition Everest. As you can see from this quote, Disney cleared most of the existing landscape for the safari. They even relocated groves of trees. The planting and replanting patterns of the trees and landscape were based on what designers thought the animals would do as they roamed the landscape. Some of the real magic in design is how Disney manipulated the physical barriers to keep certain animals safe in their area. This was orchestrated with the creation of the landscaping and water to serve as barriers or fences when a particular animal needed to be kept at bay. Disney had a lot of work to do in order to get the site ready for an attraction of this magnitude. Hoofed animals generally have fields of 15 to 25 acres to roam about freely, with other animals generally confined to a specific space, where barriers are used to give them boundaries. Most observers don't recognize or realize that while the proximity of the animals seems close, perhaps dangerously close, there are actually barriers camouflaged in plain sight to keep man and beast separated. Fences, if used, are hidden behind rockwork or landscaping. A chain link fence, which zoos use to mark the perimeter and enclose an area, aren't usually utilized here. Instead, Disney opts for a very steep slope at an angle the animals can't ascend. It is then covered in plants. You can see this often throughout the safari if you're looking for it. More illusions and trickery are at work when it comes to keeping an animal like the hippos from getting too close to the safari vehicles. As explained in The Making of Disney's Animal Kingdom, the safari vehicle seems to plunge through the Hippo River with the 2-ton critters threatening to swamp the Jeep from both sides. Actually, concrete fins with a 45-degree angle, called hippo bumpers, turn the beasts back from their pool's walls on both sides of the road. The angle is so steep that the animals can't get their feet up on them. The length of the fins also keeps the hippos in the center of the rivers so that the guests can see them. Water pumped over the ride path creates the illusion that the two pools are connected and that the vehicle is fording the river. While Disney tries to keep certain animals in specific locations with obstructions, they resort to other tricks to bring many animals to the forefront so folks get a chance to see the animals up close and personal. Throughout the safari are strategically placed tree stumps, logs, rock work, or termite mounds that provide shade, or scratching posts for the animals to leave their scent on, and often contain drinkers and feeders to encourage the animals to congregate in the area. All these things entice the animals to be more visible for the attraction. Everyone's experience is different on the trek through the Harambe Wildlife Reserve. You could take one safari and immediately board another vehicle minutes later and have a unique and different experience. No two trips are ever the same. Aside from the beautiful animals, there are a lot of little details and examples of ingenuity throughout the trip. It's hard to fathom that just about every tree and plant was deliberately placed where you see it. Many of the plants were specifically grown in accelerators, so the variety of plant life, some more mature-looking than others, was planted throughout. Even with all the spectacular things to experience, Disney couldn't help themselves with their hidden Mickeys. As you come upon the elephants, on the left side of the ride vehicle will be a little pond filled with flamingos. The center island in the pond is shaped like a hidden Mickey, as if seeing elephants weren't enough. There are two more attractions to see here in Africa before we make our way over to Asia, and they are both adjacent to the Kilimanjaro safaris. First is the Gorilla Falls Exploration Trail, a self-exploration walking tour of tropical rainforest inhabited by native African wildlife, such as gorillas, hippos, and a variety of exotic birds. These shady trails lead to Pangani Forest. Pangani means place of enrichment in Swahili, and into the savannas, where you can see the animals in their natural habitats. Disney used a bit of animal psychology throughout this trail, actually, wherever applicable throughout the park. The animal habitats were designed to keep the animals at eye level with us, the human visitors to their world. Research into the psychology of gorillas and the big cats indicates they like to feel superior to us, and if we are looking down on them like many zoos around the world, this doesn't make them happy. So Disney specifically eradicated the human superiority complex by keeping us at least at eye level with our furry friends. Our last stop in Africa is to Rafiki's Planet Watch. The only way to get to Rafiki's is via the Wildlife Express, a narrow-gauge railroad, 3.3-foot rail width, that loops 1.2 miles round-trip from Rafiki's Planet Watch and back to the train depot in Harambe. The train depot for the Wildlife Express is modeled after the open-air stations built by the British in East Africa during the early 1900s. While the station may be modeled and inspired by something British, the three engines and two sets of cars that make up the train actually are British. The engines and cars were built in 1997, only a few miles from William Shakespeare's cottage in Stratford-upon-Avon, by the model railroad firm of Severn Lamb Limited at Alchester, England. Each five-car train seats 250 passengers on contoured benches facing sideways. The positioning of the seats allows travelers to view the behind-the-scenes facilities and nighttime shelters between Africa and Asia. When the animals aren't out in the savannas or grasslands of the safari, the lions, elephants, warthogs, and antelope herds call this home. Once the train pulls into the station at Rafiki's Planet Watch, a short walk brings you to Conservation Station, a facility that provides veterinary care to the animals in the park. In addition to being an active animal hospital, much of which is in plain view for visitors to see, the center provides information on animal research and conservation programs. Just outside Conservation Station is a small petting zoo, which features a hands-on encounter with goats, sheep, pigs, cows, and donkeys. Before you leave Rafiki's Planet Watch, check out the enormous, beautiful mural on the wall when you enter the conservation station. Take a look at the eyes of the frog, ostrich, squirrel, owl, and possum. There are a few hidden Mickeys for you. As you leave Harambe, more animals and even more adventure await you in the majestic land of Asia. Here, Disney created another village, Anandapur, a town similar to, yet different from Harambe. Anandapur is similar in that its identity and storyline are created by Disney. The fictional village is an amalgamation of places that can be found throughout Asia, most notably Nepal, India, and Thailand. It's different from Harambe in that it depicts a unique lifestyle, atmosphere, and scenery. While Harambe is a bit more urban and contemporary, Anandapur resembles a rural, simple, yet spiritual existence at the foothills of the Himalayas. One of the more prominent spiritual details Disney included throughout parts of Asia are the colorful ribbons hanging about. These ribbons are symbolic of a prayer left by someone. If a prayer ribbon is removed, that prayer will be negated, so they are left in place until Mother Nature decomposes them. In contrast, where you see a bell hanging, that means the prayer was answered. Many of these prayer ribbons are found at Kali River Rapids, which is our first stop in Asia. But before we get there, take note of a few things. Up first in Asia is the restaurant Yak and Yeti. The food here is good and quite tasty. Take a look at the sign above the entrance. Look at the writing above the word restaurant. This is Sanskrit, the language of Anandapur, which translates into place of all delight. Sanskrit is an ancient language that belongs to the Indo-Aryan group and is the root of many, but not all, Indian languages. You'll see more Sanskrit writing throughout the area. The other sight to see before you embark on your river rapid trip is the 50-foot-tall towers and temple ruins that are habitats for gibbons. Anandapur is home to two distinctive species of gibbons, Siamangs and white-cheeked. You may notice some of the white-cheeked gibbons for the white fur on their cheeks and the Siamangs for their large size. They can be twice the size of other gibbons. As you approach the Kali River Rapids, there is a large structure with a roof and signage for the attraction. There are fast pass kiosks here, themed as podiums, as if to stamp or review your passport before a journey. This is an important little building, as it starts to set the stage for your journey down the Chakranadi River, which is Sanskrit for river that flows in a circle. More importantly, if you're facing it, this spot is a great landmark to remember where you dropped off your belongings before your trip down the rapids, since you're going to get wet on this ride, maybe even drenched. Take a look to the left of this building. Find a locker that's available and put some of your belongings in there to keep them dry. With your belongings safely stowed, it's time to walk the path toward the attraction. The original concept for this ride was for it to be like a safari on the river. The proposed name was Tiger Rapids Run, and it would have featured a rapids trip past tigers and live animals. This concept was ultimately nixed and replaced with the theme and story we see today, conservation and deforestation with a splash of adventure, literally. Walking through the queue for the attraction, you will eventually come upon a centuries-old temple, which is home to animal shrines and hand-painted murals. The ceiling through this part of the queue was hand-painted by a 76-year-old artisan from Bali and was inspired by scenes from Jataka Tales, a collection of sacred Buddhist stories. This area is packed with interesting items to observe and to help tell the story, not only of the area of Anandapur, but of the logging and deforestation you're about to encounter on your trip. As you stroll through the shops and offices here, there are more than 5,000 items to grab your attention. Look for the paddles that were signed by Imagineers who helped design and develop the attraction. As you make your way to the wooden pagoda and circular loading platform, get ready to board your 12-passenger raft and take a trip up a 90-foot incline to start your journey. Look around for the image of the tiger on the rock wall as you approach the top of the lift. Now, you may be preoccupied and worried about who's going to get wet on this excursion, but don't fret. Everyone will. So relax, take a deep breath, and enjoy the sense of jasmine and ginger that linger in the air. When you make your way down the rapids, the story of logging starts to unfold. The Imagineering Field Guide to Disney's Animal Kingdom gives us the lowdown. As with the rest of the park, even our grandest adventures are delivered with a conservation message woven into them. Here, the issue is that of deforestation. We hear hints of the problems in the distant sounds of chainsaws echoing through the queue. There are signs touting the value of the wilderness and warning against deforestation. we begin our travels through this mystical place and are immediately drawn to it. When the raft enters the burn zone, where a logging company has been unethically stripping the trees off the top of the mountain, we feel a palpable sense of loss. We see the erosion eating away at the banks of the river. We can't understand how people could go into such a magical, inspirational wilderness and do what they've done. The process is so far out of balance that this environment is no longer sustainable. However, in this case, nature has the last word. The environment is fighting back against this intrusion. The logging truck is teetering on the brink of falling into the rapids because of the erosion of the barren banks. The loggers are not able to continue their efforts. We are thrown down the great drop and expelled from the area, as we imagine the loggers have been as well. When you exit the ride, go over to the bridge that overlooks the rapids and check out the elephant squirters. Press the button and try to soak the rafters who you think didn't get wet enough. Our next stop in Asia is located right next to the rapids. The Maharaja Jungle Trek is a self-guided walking tour featuring tigers, gibbons, Eld's deer, black buck, Komodo dragons, Malayan flying foxes, water buffalo, and more than 50 species of birds. The backstory says this area was once the hunting grounds of several generations of wealthy Maharajas, Sanskrit for great king or great ruler. Today, it's a nature and wildlife preserve, as Mother Nature has reclaimed the hunting grounds, leaving the centuries-old palace and monuments in ruins, illustrating that planet Earth has the last word over humans. As you make your trek, the story of the Maharajas plays out before your eyes, as remnants and reminders are still very much present in the form of murals and bas-reliefs. When you walk into the aviary, notice the floor tiles and columns. This area was once a ballroom for the royal family. When viewing the gibbons, you can see 40-foot carved monument poles that are traditionally built to honor royalty or deities. Today, they are habitats. Who would want to look at deteriorating murals when you could view the powerful and beautiful tigers? Well, if you approach the tiger viewing rotunda and there are no tigers in the area, take a look at the four wall murals of the kings of Anandapur. They each offer a different story and perspective of their time spent at their royal hunting grounds. Naturally, since this is Walt Disney World, there are a few hidden Mickeys to spot. Pay attention to the earrings worn by the Maharajas. In the tiger viewing area, look at the first mural on your right, and then the mural opposite this mural on the left. Hidden Mickey earrings are on these royal gentlemen. After your visit with the tigers, it's time to track down another creature. This creature, like the tiger, is powerful and elusive, but most of all, it's mysterious and legendary. The thrilling search is on for the Yeti, which will take us to Expedition Everest, Legend of the Forbidden Mountain. Bigfoot, Sasquatch, the Abominable Snowman, and the Yeti. Different parts of the world have different names and varied cultural stories linked to the beast. We've all heard the lore about this larger-than-life creature. Is it a monster? Is it real? Is it fantasy? The world may never know. But for your time spent in the village of Sirkazong in the Himalayas, here in central Florida, the Yeti is very much real. Disney's backstory on the Yeti parallels some of the traditional folklore and regional beliefs that still stand today. For many of the cultures in the Himalayas, the Yeti is the protector of the forest and is a real creature. Disney takes this premise and weaves their own storyline around the story of this area and its protective beast. According to Disney's website, folklore has it that a fierce guardian monster protects the Forbidden Mountain. For years, the Royal Anandapur Tea Company shipped its tea by train through the Forbidden Mountain Pass. After a series of mysterious accidents were blamed on the dreaded Yeti monster, the railroad closed. Today, the railway is operating again, thanks to a group of local entrepreneurs, Himalayan Escapes, Tours and Expeditions, who offer curious travelers transportation to the base camp on the scenic mountain. Yet, there are some who believe the legend to be true and that the Yeti